It's Lesbian Visibility Week. It aims to both celebrate lesbians and show solidarity with all women and non-binary people within the LGBTQ community. While it's marked nationally, one Wisconsin organization wanted to do more to celebrate locally. The Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project's mission is to reconnect Wisconsinites with our hidden queer history with a focus on education. To celebrate Lesbian Visibility Week, they've created a free lesbian history exhibit as well as other events. To learn more about some local lesbian history, I'm joined by Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project board member, Nicole Kurth. Nicole, welcome to Lake Effect.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we're speaking during Lesbian Visibility Week, which originated in 1990. And while this is marked nationally, why did you want to mark local history? And what are some of the things that you're doing to celebrate Visibility Week?
So one of our advisors, Stephanie, brought to our attention that there was no local LGBTQ organization that was sponsoring Lesbian Visibility Week. And we discussed it as a board and we said, yeah, this is an important event and we definitely want to mark its occasion. So we got together and through Stephanie's partnership, we are working with the national organization, which is the Curve Foundation, to bring these events and make sure they're accessible to all.
And with accessibility of events, there's stuff happening kind of throughout different locations in the city. What are some of the highlights?
So some of the highlights are of the Women's History Celebration. We'd love to see you all out on Saturday, April 27th, with a good old-fashioned lesbian potluck at the community center. Also, check out our events online. We'll have films highlighted, webinars, and a lesbian history exhibit at the City Hall Rotunda. Also excited that we'll have the flag flying and the courthouse will be illuminated along with the City Hall in lesbian pride colors.
So you mentioned this lesbian history exhibit at City Hall. So I'd love to dive into some local lesbian history. And let's start with Annie Hindle, starting way back in 1884. Who was she?
So Andy Hindle was actually the first internationally famous drag queen who happened to come to the Milwaukee Dime Museum in November of 1884. And when Annie made their appearance in the city, the local newspapers didn't really know what to make of her. She was reported as an ill-mannered male impersonator who happened to marry not only two women, but a man in three separate church weddings. So they decided that she was probably a man deceiving audiences all along. It's just she wasn't, but that's how they were reporting it back then.
Yeah, don't know what to make of it, so let's make a broad generalization.
Exactly. History doesn't always get it right.
Yeah. Well, and one of the challenges of history is trying to decipher clues from what's reported from this outside perspective. So let's dive into when there's a first mention of a first lesbian hangout here in Milwaukee. Where and when was that?
So we're in 1928 now, and we're at an establishment known as the St. Charles Hotel. And if you're familiar and unfamiliar with that, it was actually located across the street from the Milwaukee City Hall. And this one's interesting because it actually was raided by the FBI. When you look at their notes, they described it that fairy boys and bulldaggers were roaming the halls in search of gin parties, as well as chorus girls who may have not been girls after all. The lobby bar in the hotel was a half block long, and it often was packed with women from the Orpheum traveling circuit who were looking to hook up with other women. The St. Charles was so decadent that it was padlocked for an entire year by prohibition agents. So it was pretty scandalous.
Yeah, the scandal and the raids seemed to be the things in the papers, especially centuries ago, right? And we touched a bit upon it, but the challenges of trying to collect and preserve LGBTQ history and what this organization does is that it's a challenge, right? So what are some of the reasons that we honestly just don't know much about mid-century women's spots and other things about lesbian culture?
Well, it has to do with, you know, feeling safe. Safety has a lot to do with it, or not trusting if they don't know who you are. A good example of that is the Fin and Feather or the Wildwood. They didn't advertise to outsiders because they were suspicious of them, and they really fiercely defended their turf. But they were great spaces that supported women, especially when looking at women's sports teams, which includes softball in the summer and bowling in the winter. And these were also noted to have spaces for women to dance together, which wasn't, you know, always available in other spaces. And there was a very colorful history, especially at the Wildwood. So Josie Carter, who is a longtime contributor to our project, she told us a tale one night that there was these Amazon women, she called them, and they were a group of big diesel women who did not tolerate toxic masculinity. And one night, a drunk male stumbled into the bar and he started hassling a Black patron in the bar. And one of the Amazons walked up to her and said, "Is he bothering you?" But she was too afraid to say yes. And the man kind of shot off his mouth and he said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" And called her a choice name. And she just wasn't going to have that. So she walked into the bathroom, took the toilet tank cover off of the toilet seat, and came back out and cracked him over the head with it. And the whole bar erupted in cheers. And it was just another night at the Wildwood.
Yeah, just another night can, I'm sure, be used as a phrase for a lot of bars in Milwaukee history here.
Yeah.
And obviously, gathering spaces are really important to LGBTQ history, especially lesbian history. And one of those places was called Stan's Nightbeat on 9th and National. Can you share a bit of Stan's Nightbeat's backstory?
So Stan's Nightbeat originally opened in 1959, and it was opened by a heterosexual couple named Stan and Carrie. And they deliberately opened a lesbian bar. And it became the hottest spot to be for the next 13 years. It was definitely a butch bar. So there was roles of butch and femme at this time because it was 65 years ago. And there was no either or. You had to make a choice. You were either in the butch camp or the femme camp. They later moved to 2nd and Pittsburgh. And it became an anchor point in the gay village by the end of the 60s. At that location, they had big open bay windows, but they soon ended up covering them over with plywood because people kept getting into fights and throwing each other through the windows. And the owners were not about dealing with nonsense. Carrie, in fact, was known to wield a shotgun. She kept behind the bar. If things were getting out of hand, she would kind of warn folks. And if they kept it up, she would actually take you out by your hair sometimes out the front door.
Well, and, you know, all these stories aren't just about wild and raucous and fight-filled nights, of course. And there's a big role that bar owners play. So I want to talk about Sharon Dixon. She worked at a couple of local gay bars before deciding to open her own, which was called the Sugar Shack.
Yeah, so Sharon Dixon actually was known to work at two bars in particular. One was called the Leaded Shade, and the other one was the River Queen. Those spaces inspired her to open up her own bar, which was a open space for women owned by women. And that's important to note because a lot of these bars back then were owned by straight couples, but they exploited the gay community because the gay dollars weren't going back into the community. So she wanted to change that. She opened up a bar with her partner, Joanne, and the Sugar Shack was on 135 East National in 1975. And it became very well known around the Midwest. People would travel here because they found out it was owned by the community and they wanted to contribute to supporting the bar. They did also defend their territory there when necessary. There's a tale that we uncovered while doing some research that two men came into the bar and they were causing trouble. And Sharon said, "You need to leave." And they refused. And so she got on the microphone in the bar and informed all the patrons, "Hey, we're no longer serving until these two guys leave." And they found a way to motivate those two men to leave very quickly. And in fact, one of them left so quickly that he dropped his wallet, which they had to call the police for. And they turned the wallet over. And when the police officer opened the wallet, and looked at the ID, he noted that it belonged to the son of a police officer. So the women went back to partying that night, and I'm assuming that that son maybe got an earful from their dad later that night.
Well, and, you know, highlights the importance of safe spaces and owners who back up their patrons, right?
Exactly. And Sharon's adventures in bar ownership did not end there. Eventually, she split up with her partner, and she ended up opening a new bar on 15th and Scott. And that one is pretty well known to this day. It was called Kathy's Nut Hut, and it operated from 1980 to 2014. And for years, it threw something called Fanny's Fest, which was a longtime lesbian institution, Fanny's. And it was a grassroots street fair. They helped raise money for the AIDS crisis, which is important to note. Sharon is no longer a bar owner. She's retired from it. But she was very, very involved in a lot of the work years ago.
So people like Sharon and the institutions they championed aren't here today, but Sharon is one of the people highlighted in the history exhibit that we talked about earlier. But if people aren't able to go to City Hall in person or see the courthouse or other things like that during Lesbian Visibility Week, how can they get connected to this local history?
We recently launched a new website. It's updated. So if you have never visited our website or haven't seen it in a while, it's very informative, has lots of pictures to look at. There's podcasts and all kinds of things you can look at there. Also, you can follow us on social media such as Facebook, Instagram, or even LinkedIn. And please note that we might be coming to a Pride Festival near you this summer. So we are launching in commemoration of our 30th anniversary this June. We'll be traveling around Wisconsin on our Summer to Be Seen tour. So look for us with our pop-up history exhibits. We'd love to talk to you, hear your stories. And if you have any recommendations of folks that you would like us to interview, or even if you want us to interview you, let us know, because we love discovering new history and hearing your stories, because it's what it's all about.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining me to share more history for Lesbian Visibility Week.
Thank you so much for having me, Audrey. You have a lovely day.
Nicole Kurth is the Pride Center Coordinator at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay and a board member of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project. You can find out more information about Lesbian Visibility Week and the local events around it at wuwm.com. I am a volunteer community advisor for the History Project.